War Command.
With Samos.
I hesitate, thinking about what Evangeline told me before my coronation. That Julian and Annabelle were scheming to kill him. Remove the rift from the equation, and maybe buy us some peace with his corpse. If that's the price, I won't stop her. Perhaps is all I can manage before I try to change the subject. What's your plan? I ask her. I've never known Diana Farley to strike without some kind of idea, maybe even an outright trick up her sleeve. Especially not with someone like Davidson backing her, not to mention the entire Scarlet Guard. You've got one, right?
We might,
she replies.
And you?
We were trying to clog up the Armada, trap them maybe, force a ceasefire, but those nymph queens are unbeatable on the water.
Are they?
Farley narrows her eyes at me.
I think that Iris gave you a good scare back in Harbor Bay.
I try not to think about it. The crushing weight of water pulling me down faster than I thought possible. Perhaps.
Well then, we should return the favor.
Fine. I'll take some oblivions, some teleporters, see if we can... To my surprise, she waves me off. I flush, taken aback by her dismissal.
There's no need for that,
Farley says, turning away from me. She raises her radio and twists the knob to some corresponding channel.
Premier, how's your side of things?
Davidson's voice filters back in reply, and I hear echoes of gunfire on his end. Holding steady for now. Some Piedmontese tried the cliffs, but they didn't expect to run into us. Send them back. I imagine Piedmont soldiers in purple and gold falling from the bank, split apart by new blood troops. What about your end, General? Davidson presses. Farley grins.
I've got the more reasonable Kalor with me here, and Barrow is going after the other one.
Premier, I say into the radio. I have a few hundred silvers of my own spread between the bridge ruins and still fighting down on the ships. Can you give them cover? I can do you one better. They need to get off the water, and I'll send my teleporters in now, he replies.
Mine as well,
Farley clips back.
Grab as many as we can before things really heat up.
I glance at her, brow furrowed. Another wave of ships? Her smile spreads.
Something like that.
Now isn't really the time for surprises.
Honestly, it's like you've forgotten what we're capable of.
She chuckles. It's an odd sight to see her laughing against the backdrop of war and destruction.
We had to wait until the water was high enough, and luckily for us, those nymph queens were happy to oblige.
I look at the water again, along with the surge now breaking against the ships, raising their hulls until they're level with the lower cliffs. A few more surges, and we'll be staring right into their teeth, with every missile and shell pointed our way. Somehow, I don't see how that's a desirable position to be in. Farley looks amused by my confusion.
I'm glad you decided to see things our way, Cal.
The right way, I reply. The way it should be. Her smile fades, but not in displeasure. Surprise, maybe. For the first time, her touch is gentle, driven by compassion. Her finger grazes my shoulder.
No more kings, Kalor.
No more kings, I echo. Instead of Farley, the missiles, the ships, the water, the scream of wounded soldiers, I hear my mother's voice. The voice I think she had.
Cal will not be like the others.
She wanted a certain path for me, just like my father. She wanted me to be different, but she still wanted me to be a king. I hope my choice would make her proud.
Speaking of kings,
Farley mutters, her demeanor changes in an instant. She straightens and points at a figure crossing the square.
Is that?
His black cape flutters in the fog, snapping back to reveal limbs coated in perfect mirrored armor, His steps are sure and quick as he moves through the crowd, soldiers jumping out of his way to let him pass. Without breaking pace, he steps onto the crumbling bridge. "Volo Samos," I breathe, gritting my teeth. Whatever he's about to do won't end well for us. But he doesn't slow, even as the bridge beneath him becomes more and more precarious. The ships, rising on the forced tide, are almost directly beneath him. And still he doesn't stop. Not even at the edge. Farley gasps when he plummets, his body falling slowly, his cape and armor unmistakable through a gap in the fog. I turn away, unable to watch him break himself on the steel below. Across the square, I spy my grandmother, standing resolute, her battle uniform aglow in red and orange. She stares at me through the fray of soldiers. At her side, Julian hangs his head. I don't think he's ever killed someone before.
35. Iris. "Another tidal pull and we can offload directly from the ships," Mother mutters, stepping out of the ship's bridge to stand in the open air. Rain pelts down, beating on her exposed face. I follow her closely, as do her guards. She's armored to the throat, swathed in black and cobalt blue plate. We won't take any chances. A stray bullet could catch her at any moment and bring our invasion crashing down around our ears. "Be patient, Mother," I murmur, almost glued to her side. "They won't be able to hold us off for much longer." I can't help but hope. Tiberius Calor crippled his country so perfectly, betraying his own people as well as the Reds, casting aside any chance he had to keep the throne he won from his wretched brother. Archaon will fall, and fall soon. I glance up at the cliffs on either side of the river, both edges wreathed in smoke and mist. Lightning streaks across the sky, oddly colored, and I'm reminded of my own wedding. The freak Reds and blood traders of the mountains attacked the city that day, albeit with less success than we are having. The waters of the river thrum around us, caressing the hulls of our armada. I feel it keenly, every curve of the waves, as far as my ability can reach. The broken Archaon Bridge juts out above us, still crumbling. Debris splashes into the river harmlessly. I raise a hand, batting away a particularly large chunk of concrete with a rising swell of water. Another tumbles after it, falling oddly. It flashes metallic as it turns, end over end, hurtling right for the deck of the ship. My fingers brush against the air, raising another wave, but my mother grabs my wrist. "Let him fall," she says, her eyes locked on the figure. I don't realize it's a body until it lands on the deck a few yards in front of us, limbs mangled and skulls split open like a melon, spewing silver and white across the deck. His mirrored armor shatters like his bones, some of it splintering into dust at the impact. The wrecked corpse is a tall man, older, judging by the remains of a beard beneath his crumpled face. A fold of his black cape splays over the rest of his body. The fabric is edged in silver. Familiar colors. Suddenly the battle seems far away, distant as a dream, and the world at the edge of my vision goes hazy. Everything narrows to this man, destroyed in front of us, no crown on his brow. He doesn't even have a face anymore. "So ends Volo Samos and the Kingdom of the Rift," Mother says, stepping neatly to stand over his broken bones. She tows aside his cape and turns the ruined remains of his skull without flinching. I glance away, unable to look. My stomach flips queasily. Queen Annabelle's trade is complete. Still examining the corpse, Mother tuts loudly. Her dark eyes run over the dead king, drinking him in. She thinks this will save her city and her grandson. Steeling myself, I force my gaze back to Samos. I'm no stranger to blood. Another corpse shouldn't frighten me. This man is the reason my father is dead, and our country is without its king, my mother without her husband. He deserves every inch of this ending. And what a brutal ending it was. Foolish woman, I seethe, my thoughts turning to Annabelle Larrilan and her weak attempt to stop an invasion. You will not succeed. The price is already paid. Satisfied, Mother steps back over the body. She gestures with one hand, and two of our guards begin the gruesome process of removing Samos from the deck. Silver blood streaks like paint as they drag him away. We're all fools for the people we love, dear, Mother says airily, clasping her hands in front of her. Without breaking stride, she glances at one of our lieutenants. Even concentration on both sides of the city, focused on the massing troops. With a nod, the officer ducks back into the command bridge, and her orders are relayed across the armada. Both Lakelander and Piedmontese ships respond in kind, their guns erupting with a volley of fire. Explosions and smoke crackle along the riverbanks, shearing off cliff rock as well as city structures. After a moment, our enemies on both sides return fire, but weakly. Most bullets ping off steel or sink in the water. Mother watches with a grim smile. Break their lines and we'll have an easy way of it, once the river is high enough. She's thinking about the thousands of soldiers below decks, waiting to spring from our ships and overrun whoever waits above. A harsh wind blows up, carrying with it the sound of jets screaming far overhead. I grit my teeth. The Norden Air Fleet is their only measure of superiority, with Piedmont's fleet diminished, and our own sorely lacking in comparison. All we can do is hold them at bay with the storm, using our own meager jets to distract them from the armada. It seems to be working, for now at least. As for the Norden soldiers Tiberius foolishly sent down among us, the deck troops aren't having a difficult time holding them off. Even with Strongarms and Swifts leading the charge, the many nymphs of House Osanos use the river to their advantage. Our advantage. Even now, I can see their numbers dwindling. Teleporters, I snarl, watching as the Montfort oddities blink in and out of existence. They snatch away the last of the Nortons, returning them to the relative safety of the city cliffs. They're retreating from the ships. I turn to Mother, torn between pride and disappointment. The Nortons fear us enough to run. What's left of them, at least? The Queen of the Lakelands raises her chin, looking imperious and regal. Recalling to make a last stand. Good. I'm quickly struck by the image of my mother striding boldly through Caesar's Square, up the steps of the palace that was once my glorified prison, to sit the throne the Colors have finally lost. Will my mother be an empress when all this is done? Master of all between the lakes and the sea, from the frozen tundra to the radiated borders of the Wash. Don't get ahead of yourself, Iris. The battle is not yet won. I try to center myself in the moment. The sharp tang of smoke and Samos's blood is a good anchor. I inhale sharply, letting the smell overwhelm my senses. It's funny. I expected this anger inside me to waste away and die with the Samos king. But I still feel it, deep in my chest, gnawing at my heart. My father is dead, and no throne, no crown can bring him back. No amount of vengeance paid can push away this pain. I draw another breath, focusing on the waters below us. The envoy of our gods, it carries every blessing and curse. Normally the sensation would calm me down. Being so close to such power has a way of humbling even me. Right now, I sense no gods that I recognize. But I do sense something. Do you feel that? I whirl to my mother. The armor all over my body seems to tighten, threatening to smother me as every one of my nerve endings lights up with fear. What is that? That thing in the water? Mother blinks at me, reading my unease. Her eyes glaze for a moment as she reaches out with her own considerable ability, hunting through the waves for what has me so on edge. I watch, breathless, waiting for her to tell me it's nothing. My imagination, confusion, a mistake. She sharpens, her eyes narrowing to slits, and the rain suddenly feels like icicles down my spine. Another current? she hisses, snapping her fingers at one of the officers nearby. A Norton betrayer, he is quick to oblige, his face drawn and pale. He still seems uncomfortable in the blue uniform of the Lakelands. Osanos, she barks at him. Are your nymphs pulling another tide? He shakes, bowing low. Osanos and his extended family aren't as talented as us, but they're formidable in their own right, not to mention integral to our efforts.
Not by my orders, Your Majesty.
I bite my lip, my sensations still edging around the gargantuan thing moving through the water. I try to push it off course, but the object is just too heavy. A whale? I mutter, hardly believing my own suggestion. Mother shakes her head, teeth on edge.
Bigger. Heavier, she says. And more than one.
Behind us, the ship officers scramble in the command bridge, reacting to a sudden dozen blinking lights and alarms. The sound hits me like knives.
Brace for impact!
One of them shouts, gesturing for us to take cover. Mother grabs me, her arms sliding around my waist to hold me close. We watch in horror, feeling the currents below us as the many somethings move through the armada. They must be mechanical, weapons of war we have no knowledge of. The first strike comes in the middle of the fleet, a battleship suddenly leaning with a groan of tearing metal. An explosion erupts below the waterline, blowing out in an arc of foam and shrapnel. A Piedmont ship catches fire, its powder magazine obliterating the front half of the hull. The blast of heat feels like a burn, but I can't turn away, watching in horrified awe as the ship sinks in less than a minute, drowning gods know how many within its belly. Our flagship shudders under us, clanking as something rams the hull beneath the surface.
Push, Iris, push!
Mother commands, letting go of me to rush to the edge of the deck. She leans forward, arms outstretched, and the waters below obey her will, rushing backward in waves. I join her, letting my ability take hold. I press and push, trying to dislodge whatever is ramming the ship. But it's so heavy, so big, with an engine of its own. We're so focused on protecting the flagship, I hardly notice the rest of the armada floundering all around us. Without orders, a few of the ships painstakingly try to turn, navigating the foaming river among the growing steel hulks bobbing and sinking. Sweat breaks out across my brow, joining with the hurtling rain, and I taste salt on my lips. It stings, forcing me to blink and lose focus.
Mother!
I force out. She doesn't answer, her hands clawed into the mist as if she can lift the new weaponry directly out of the water. She snarls a little, the sound lost in the howling wind. Lightning flashes again, another blue bolt striking down. I'm not fast enough to deflect it, and it hits home on the ship next to us, striking the deck with the sizzle of water and flesh. Soldiers scream, leaping off the ship entirely to escape the glowing hell of electrocution. They're quickly swallowed by the churning waters.
Mother!
I say again, shouting this time. She curses through gritted teeth.
Those red bastards have boats below the water, boats and weapons.
We can't stop them, can we?
Her eyes shine, bright even against the storm and the sudden shift in our fortunes. Without warning, she drops her hands.
Not without great loss, and not with any guarantees,
she murmurs as if dazed. I try to shake her out of it.
We have to get up to the cliffs, get on land. We can still overwhelm their forces.
Behind us, our guards close in, tense and ready to spring, waiting for my mother's command. She ignores them, staring at me instead.
Can we?
She says, her voice oddly soft and detached. It's like she's been sleeping, and now she is awake. Mother pats me on the cheek, her touch cold and wet. She looks past me, fixing on the deck. I turn to follow her gaze, only to see the last of Samos's blood darkening against the steel. The last piece of our revenge. Even the rain can't wash it away. Even the gods can't heal this pain. I flinch as another ship succumbs to attack, keeling over into the river.
Is this finally ended? I wonder aloud. Her fingers lace with mine. Ended? She breathes, squeezing my hand. Never. Not truly. But for now, I'm getting my daughter out of here alive. For the first time today, I look backward, downriver, toward retreat. I swallow hard, dazed by the sudden turn in the battle. It feels like being cut open. But there is only one choice between death and defeat. Let's go home.
36. Maven. After so many days in captivity, smothered by Silent Stone and separated from my bracelets, the burst of flame is more quenching than water to a thirsty man. I let it lick up inside me, trailing like a lover's kiss, and explode along my skin, powerful and furious enough to throw back that wretched Electricon. He falls and Mare falls too, both of them slamming backward onto the hard tile of Caesar's Square. I don't spare a glance for her as I run, leaving fire in my wake, a wall to defend my escape. I keep another burst of flame close, coiling in my fist, using all my energy to keep it burning. My feet carry me over the square, and I sprint like never before. I'm not Cal, I'm not particularly fast or strong, but fear keeps me alert and daring. The chaos of Archeon works to my advantage, not to mention my intimate knowledge of the palace. White fire was my home, and I have not forgotten it. The sudden arrival of hundreds of Scarlet Guard soldiers is more than enough to distract Cal's troops, still trying to organize themselves against the Lakelander assault. Nevertheless, I keep my head down, black hair falling forward to obscure my all-too-recognizable face. These soldiers were mine, should still be mine. The voice in my head shifts from my own to hers. "Fools, all of them," my mother sneers. I can almost feel her hands ghosting along my shoulders, keeping me upright as I run. "Replacing you with that wretched spineless boy. He will be the end of a dynasty, the end of an age." She isn't wrong. She was never truly wrong. If only Father could see you now, Cal. See what you've become, and what you've done to his kingdom. Of all my many wishes and regrets, that one cuts deepest. My father is dead, but he died loving Cal, trusting Cal, believing in Cal's greatness and perfection. I wonder if I should have let things run their course. If somehow I could have simply made him see how flawed the perfect son was. But Mother had her reasons. She knew best. And that is simply another path untaken. A dead future, as John would say. Another missile explodes nearby, and as before, I use the resulting explosion to my advantage. It breaks around me, harmless, allowing me to escape through a bloom of smoke and fire. I can't return to the treasury tunnels, not with those red rats still crawling around. But there are other ways down to the tracks, other ways to get out of Archeon undetected. The ways I know best are in Whitefire itself, and I beat a path to the palace as quickly as I can. That damn train. I curse whoever stole it. Whatever sniveling weasel is now riding along, safe and sound. At least I can still walk the track. I'm well accustomed to darkness by now. What's a few more miles? Nothing at all. I've always felt darkness all over me. Stubborn as a stain. It follows wherever I go. And where will I go? Where can I go? I'm a fallen king, a murderer, a betrayer, a monster to anyone with eyes and a modicum of sense. They'll kill me in the Lakelands, in Montfort, in my own country. I deserve it, I think, as I run. I should be dead 1,000 times, executed in 100 different ways. Each one more painful than the last. I think of Mare behind me, sprawled across the tiles of the square, picking herself up again, ready to give chase. My brother, too, leading some stupidly valiant effort to defend the city in his ill-gotten throne. I scoff at the thought as I vault up the steps of Whitefire, flying over familiar stone. The flame in my palm gutters, reducing to a flicker before I push it back to life, letting it envelop my hand. The interior is just as empty as the square is full. Whatever nobles and courtiers aren't out fighting must be deep within the palace, barricaded in their rooms, or perhaps they've fled too. Either way, my footsteps are the only sound as I cross the entrance hall, my path familiar as my own heartbeat. Even though it's midday, the halls are dark and cold, with the windows clouded by fog and smoke. Electricity flickers as the power grid reacts to the battle outside, turning the lights on and off in patternless bursts. Good, I think. In my gray clothing, I can blend into the shadows of Whitefire. I used to do it as a boy, hide in alcoves or behind curtains, spying and listening, not for my mother then, but for my own curiosity. Cal used to spy with me when he had the time, or cover for me at lessons, telling tutors I was sick or otherwise detained. Odd that I can remember all that, but that the emotion behind it, the connection we must have had, is almost entirely gone. Severed or surgically removed by my mother. And no one can ever make it grow back. Even though he tried. He searched. He wanted to save you. The thought almost makes me vomit, and I push it away. The doors of the throne room are heavier than I expected. Funny to think I've never opened them myself. There's always been a guard or a sentinel, usually a Telki. I feel weak as I drive my shoulder into one, pushing it ajar enough to slip through. My throne is gone, the silent stone dragged away to only Cal knows where. Our father's seat is returned, the inferno carved from diamond glass. I sneer at the sparkling monstrosity. A symbol of our father, his crown, and everything he lacked. Our chairs flank Cal's throne, one for Julian Jacos and one for our grandmother. The thought of both makes my lip curl. Without them, Cal would never have made it this far, and that snake Iris would have never handed me over. I hope she drowns on the river, suffocated by her own ability. No, better yet, I hope she burns. Isn't that the punishment of her gods, to suffer forever beneath an opposing element? Maybe Iris and Cal will manage to kill each other. They came so close last time. A boy can certainly hope. The door to the left of the throne is smaller, leading to the king's private rooms, including a study, meeting areas, and the council chamber. As I step into the long room lined with shelving, the lights switch off again, plunging me into semi-darkness. The windows in here are tall, looking out on a gray, empty courtyard. I pass them quickly, counting. 1, 2, 3. After the fourth window, I stop and count shelves. 3 up. Thankfully, Cal hasn't had time to rearrange the books in here, or else he would have discovered the mechanism attached to a leather-bound tome regarding economic fluctuations during the last decade. It glides forward with the lightest pull, activating rotating gears behind the lacquered wood. The entire shelf swings forward, revealing a narrow stairwell cut into the exterior wall. Using my still-burning flame as a torch, I plunge downward, letting the shelf swing into place behind me. The darkness is thick with damp and the air is stale. I suck it down anyway, careful on the steps as I descend. This is an old servant's stair, long out of use, but it still connects to the other passages beneath the palace. From there I can get to the treasury, war command, the courts, or any other place of value around Caesar's Square. My ancestors built these passages for use during war and siege. I'm glad for their foresight. As well as my own. The steps empty out into a wider hall lined with rough stone, the floor beneath sloping at a gentle decline. I plod along, daring to breathe a bit deeper and slower. There's a battle raging above my head, but I'm long gone. The only people who know about these tunnels are otherwise preoccupied. I might actually survive this. Then something flickers ahead, a reflection of fire, but distorted somehow, rippling. I slow my pace, shuffling my feet to muffle the sound of my steps. Another deep breath, and I smell water. Those fucking Lakelanders. The path ahead of me slopes into black water, its surface reflecting my flaming hand. I feel like punching a wall. Instead, I curse against gritted teeth. In spite of the wet, I take a few steps forward, until the water laps over my ankles, chilling me to the bone. It only gets deeper. Furious, I trudge back out, kicking at the dirt floor. A few bits skitter, plopping into the inscrutable flood. I bite back another curse in turn, hurrying back the way I came. My body burns with frustration, and heat spreads over my cheeks. Another stair, another tunnel, I tell myself, even though I know exactly where that will lead. Another flooded passage, another barred escape. The walls suddenly feel too close, pressing down from every side. I quicken my pace, the fire in my hand waning as I begin to stumble. My fingers graze the stone within reach, brushing over the uneven surface as I reach the steps again. I'm almost sprinting when I reach the top and spill out again into the fresh air of the adjoining chamber. If I can't get into the tunnels, I'll have to go over the walls. Somehow get up and down, and head west, avoiding the slums upriver, the vast estates ringing the land around the capital. I'll need to disguise my face somehow. Instead of focusing, my mind spirals out, paralyzed by fear. I need to stay on the task at hand, get out of the city, but everything blurs. I need food, a map, supplies. Every step above ground is a step toward danger. They'll hunt me down and kill me, Mare and my brother, if they manage to survive. I raid the study first, searching in vain for anything that might be of use. Bracelets, especially. Flame makers. Cal might keep a spare somewhere, but there's nothing in the many drawers and compartments of the fine desk that was once mine. I contemplate a particularly sharp letter opener for a moment, holding the dagger-like piece of metal up to a ray of weak light. With a swipe of my hand, I draw a slice across a painting of my father. Even mangled, his face still taunts me, eyes burning from the ripped canvas. I tighten my grip on the letter opener as I turn away, unable to face his stare for very long. The royal bedchamber is next. I blink and I'm there, nearly kicking the doors off their hinges. But I stop short, perplexed. Instead of a luxurious suite fit only for the King of Norta, I find empty rooms stripped of furnishings and even paint. No curtains, no rugs. Nothing but a haphazard collection of cleaning supplies. Cal isn't sleeping here. Not while bits of me still linger. Coward. This time I really do punch a wall, leaving my knuckles raw and smarting. I have no way of knowing which room might be his. The residence wings are home to dozens of bedrooms, and I hardly have time to search them all. I'll have to settle for stealing what I can outside the city. Flint and steel make sparks as easily as any bracelet. I can acquire that. Somehow. My vision blurs at the edges. An odd haze that pulses in time with my rapidly increasing heartbeat. I shake my head, trying to make the sensation dissipate, but it stays put. A pain springs up in my skull, digging into the bone. I suck down another breath, forcing myself to take big gasps of air in an attempt to calm down. As in the tunnel, the walls feel too close and like they're getting closer by the second. I wonder if the windows are about to shatter all over me, cutting my flesh to ribbons. I trip on the stairs as I make my way back down to the throne room. "No choice, Maven," Mother croons to me as I slip in again. That's all I get. She was never one to advise retreat or surrender, Elara Mirandis gave no ground in life, and she instilled the same instinct in me. My headache spreads, arcing across my skull in a web of sharp pain. Above me, the lights kick on again, so brightly they whine in their bulbs. The electricity surge is too strong. One by one, they pop, raining smashed glass along the polished floor behind me. I manage to dodge as the bulb directly above me shrieks apart. The filaments continue to burn, sparking white and purple. Stoic, calm, and deadly, Mayor Barrow stands firm, silhouetted in the narrow opening. Without blinking, she slides through and shuts the door behind her, locking us both in, together. "It's over, Maven," she whispers. This time I sprint for the other side of the throne and burst into another set of rooms usually reserved for the Queen. I made my own modifications to them, modifications that would disagree with most. Mare is faster than I am, but she follows at a languid pace, haunting me, teasing me. She could run me down at any second, electrocute me with one well-aimed bolt of lightning. "Good," I think. "Keep on coming, Barrow." I feel the telltale twinge up ahead, the empty ache that plagues all Silvers and New Bloods. One more door to push open, one last chance to survive where so many others would die. "I will not fail, Mother." Grinning, I turn around, letting her watch me as I back farther into the dark chamber. The single window is small, and a weak light fills the space, illuminating the dark walls patterned like a checkerboard of gray and black. The gray bits gleam dully, showing ribbons of liquid silver. Arven blood. Silence blood. She hesitates at the threshold, feeling the press of silent stone. I watch it ruin her. The color drains from her face, and she almost looks silver in the cold gray light. I keep walking back and back, to the next door, the next passage, my chance. She doesn't stop me. Her throat bobs as she swallows around the fear clawing at her. I gave her this wound. I locked her away in chains, drained her ability, made her live like a wasting ghost. If she steps forward, she'll have no weapons at all, no shield, no guarantee. The letter opener in my hand feels suddenly heavy. I could drop it, leave the blade and run. I could let her live, or I could kill her. The choice is easy, and so very difficult. I hold my ground. My grip tightens on the iron.
37. Mare. The room is a coffin, a maw of stone that will swallow me whole. I feel dead, even on the threshold, hesitating to fully succumb to this place and the person who built it. My heart pounds so loudly, I know Maven can hear it. His eyes trace over me in a way that is too familiar and too close, despite the yards between us. He focuses on my throat, on the vein pulsing with all my fear. I expect him to lick his lips. My hand flexes in vain, attempting to call up a bolt of lightning. All I get are weak sparks, darkly purple, dying quickly against the might of so much silent stone. Something gleams in his hand, flashing in the dim light. A knife, I think. Thin and small, but sharp enough. My hand strays to my hip, for the pistol Titan harangued me into wearing. But the holster is gone entirely, probably lost in the bridge collapse. I gulp again. I have no weapons at all. And Maven knows it. He grins, teeth white and wicked. "Aren't you going to try to stop me?" he says, tipping his head like some curious puppy. My mouth feels dry when I speak. "Don't make me do this, Maven." It comes out raspy. Maven just shrugs, Somehow he manages to make his simple gray clothing look like silk and fur and steel. He isn't a king anymore, but no one seems to have told him. I'm not making you do anything, he says imperiously. You don't have to suffer this. You can stand right there, or even turn around. It makes no difference to me. I force another breath, stronger than before. The too familiar memory of Silent Stone claws up my spine. Don't make me kill you like this, I growl, sounding dangerous and lethal. What are you going to do? Stare at me? He shoots back dryly. I'm terrified. It's a brash show, his forced nonchalance. I know Maven well enough to see the truth in his words, the real fear weaving through his practiced arrogance. His eyes dart quicker than before, not over my face, but my feet, so he can move when I move, run when I lunge. In spite of the dagger, he's without his weapons too. I don't tremble when I take the first slow step, sliding into the prison of Silent Stone. You should be. Maven stumbles back, surprised, almost tripping over himself. But he recovers quickly, the dagger tight in his hand as I continue forward. He mirrors my movements, stepping backward. The lethal dance is achingly slow, and we never break our stare. We don't even blink. I feel as if I'm walking a tightrope over a pit of wolves, barely keeping balance. One wrong move, and I'll fall to their fangs. Or maybe I'm the wolf. I can see myself in his eyes, and his mother, and Cal. All we did to get here, in the middle of the end of his world. I lied, and was lied to. Betrayed, and was betrayed. I hurt people, and so many people hurt me. I wonder what Maven sees in my eyes. It won't end here, he murmurs, his voice low and smooth. I'm reminded of Julian and his melodic ability. You can drag my corpse across the world, and it won't end any of this. Likewise, I reply, showing my teeth. The inches close between us, in spite of his best efforts. I'm more agile than he is. The Red Dawn won't stop with me. He offers a twisting smirk. Then it seems we're both dispensable. We don't matter anymore. I bark out a laugh. I've never mattered the way he still does. I'm used to it. I like the hair, Maven murmurs, filling the empty space. His eyes run over the tangle of brown and purple, spilling over one shoulder. I don't reply. The last card he plays is obvious, but it still stings. Not because I want what he offers, but because I remember a girl who would have accepted it. She knows better now. We can still run. His voice deepens, letting the offer hang in the air. Together. I should laugh at him, twist the knife, make him suffer as much as I can in these last moments we have. Instead, I feel some piece of my heart break for someone so irrevocably lost. And I feel true sorrow for the other brother in the midst of all this, who tried and failed, who never deserved what's happening now. Maven, I sigh, shaking my head at his blindness. The last person who loves you isn't standing in this room. He's out there, and you burned that bridge to ashes. He goes deathly still, face white as bone. Not even his icy eyes move. When I take another step, coming within arm's length, he doesn't seem to notice. I ball a fist at my side, bracing myself. Slowly, he blinks. And I see nothing in him. Maven Kalor is empty. Very well. The dagger cuts at my throat, swiping with vicious and blistering speed. I lean backward, dodging the blow without thought. He keeps coming, keeps slicing, saying nothing, My body reacts before my brain, all instinct as I deflect his strikes. I'm faster than he is, and my arms swing in time with his movements, catching his wrists before he can do any damage with the tiny, wicked gleam of sharp iron. I have nothing except my own fists and feet. My focus is on keeping the dagger away from my skin, and I barely land any blows of my own. I twist, trying to trip him with a hooked ankle, but he steps neatly over the attempt. My first mistake, leaving my back exposed. I move as he does, and a stab for my lungs becomes a long but shallow gash across my side. Hot red blood wells up, filling the air with a copper tang. I almost expect him to apologize. Maven has never truly delighted in my pain, but he gives no quarter, and neither do I. Ignoring the spreading pain, I jab at his throat with a closed fist, hitting hard. He wheezes and stumbles, dropping to a knee. I strike again, kicking him across the jaw. The momentum sends him sideways, his eyes wide and dazed as he spits silver blood in all directions. If not for the dagger, I would use the opportunity to get my arms around his throat and squeeze until his body is cold. Instead, I leap, using my weight to keep him pinned as I fight the fingers still clawed around the dagger hilt. He growls beneath me, in spite of the jaw, trying to force me off. I have to use my teeth. The taste of silver blood poisons my mouth when I clamp down on his fingers, cutting through flesh straight to the bone. His growls turn to wailing screams. The sound rips into me, made worse by the effect of silent stone. Everything hurts more than it should. I push through it and pry his fingers off, biting where I must, until the dagger is mine. It's slick with his blood and mine, silver and red, darker by the second. Suddenly, his other hand is around my throat, squeezing without any restraint, crushing the air from my windpipe. He's heavier than me and uses his weight to fling me onto my back. One of his knees digs into my shoulder, keeping my dagger arm pinned. The other presses into my collarbone, right over the brand he gave me. It shrieks and stings beneath the pressure, and I feel the bone crack with an agonizing slowness. It's my turn to scream. I tried, Mare. He hisses, his cold breath washing over my face. Still struggling for air, I can't do much more than gasp and choke. My vision splits in spots, leaving only his eyes above me, too blue, too frozen, inhuman in their blankness. They are not the eyes of a fire prince. This is not Maven Kalor. That boy is gone, lost. Whoever he was born as will not be buried with him. My neck aches, bruising beneath his fingers as blood vessels burst. I can barely think, my mind narrowing to the dagger still clenched in my fist. I try to raise my arm again, but Maven's weight makes it impossible. Tears prick at my eyes when I realize this is how it ends. No lightning, no thunder. I'll die, a red girl, one of thousands crushed beneath a silver crown. Maven's grip on my throat never loosens. If anything, it becomes tighter, crushing the muscles in my neck until I feel like my spine might snap clean. The world dims, the spots across my vision spreading like black rot. But Maven leans, slightly, in the smallest way, putting more pressure on my broken collarbone and less on my shoulder, enough to free my arm. I don't think. I just swing, wildly, blade ready, as his eyes fade. They seem sad and satisfied. Before I open my eyes, I'm intensely aware of how big my tongue feels in my mouth. An odd thing to fixate on, against everything else. I try to swallow, which only exacerbates the pain in my throat. It flares up, angry, as the muscles in my neck scream in protest. I tense against the pain, limbs shifting beneath the blanket of the bed, wherever I am. "Give Sarah a second," I hear Killorn say, his voice close at my ear. He stinks of sweat and smoke. "Don't move if you can help it." "Okay," I rasp, and that hurts worse than anything before. He laughs a bit. "Don't speak, either. Might be a bit difficult for you." Normally I'd hit him, or tell him how wretched he smells, but feeling rather restrained, I elect to keep my eyes shut and jaw clenched against the ache. Sarah shuffles around the bed, her touch lingering as she weaves around to my left side. She puts her blissful hands to my neck, and I realize that the gash on my ribs must be gone. I can't feel it anymore. She tips my head just so, forcing me to lift my chin in spite of the pain. I wince, hissing a little, and Killorn puts a steadying hand on my wrist. Sarah's healing ability quickly mitigates my discomfort, pooling over the bruises and swelling. "Your vocal cords aren't as bad as I expected," she muses. "Sarah Skonos has a lovely voice, light, like a bell. After so many years without a tongue, one might think she would make up for lost time, but she still speaks sparingly, her words chosen with careful intention. They won't be difficult." "Take your time, Sarah. No rush," Killorn mutters. I snap my eyes open, glaring at him as he grins. The lights above are bright, but not harsh, hardly the fluorescent sharpness one might expect from an infirmary. I blink, trying to place myself. With a jolt, I realize I'm not in the infirmary of the barracks at all, but in one of the palace bedrooms. No wonder the bed is so soft and the room is so quiet. Killorn lets me look around, giving me the space I need. I shift, turning my wrist so I can take his hand in mine. "So, you're still kicking around?" Already my throat hurts less, only twinging, hardly enough to keep me quiet. "In spite of my best efforts," he replies, giving me a reassuring squeeze. I can see where he tried to wipe his face, leaving streaks of clean skin edged by dirt and blood. The rest of him is just as filthy, which makes him stand out like a sore thumb against the elegant trappings of the palatial bedroom. "Mostly I just stayed out of the way." "Finally," I mutter. Sarah's fingers continue their dance across my neck, spreading a soothing warmth. "Someone beat some sense into you." He chuckles. "It certainly took long enough." The smile, the easy manner on him, even the way he holds his shoulders without weight or tension, it can only mean one thing. "So, I'm guessing we won," I sigh, too surprised to even comprehend what that means. I have no idea what a real victory would even look like. "Not entirely." Killorn rubs a hand over his dirty cheek, smearing the grime across the clean parts of him. "Idiot," I think, kindly. The Mersives were enough to scare off the Armada, and the Lakelanders managed to limp back out to sea. I think the big shots are still negotiating a ceasefire now. I try to sit up a little, only to have Sarah press me back down, gently. "But not surrender?" I ask, forced to watch Killorn from the corner of my eye. He shrugs. "It could become one, but no one tells me much of anything," he adds with a good-natured wink. "A ceasefire isn't permanent." I grit my teeth, thinking of the Lakelanders returning a year from now. "They won't let this last. Could you just enjoy being alive for one damn second?" Killorn chuckles, shaking his head at me. "You'll at least be pleased to know there's a joint effort underway to start cleanup of the city, silver and red." He puffs out his chest, very proud of his report. "Cameron and her father are on their way down, too. They're coordinating with Cal for worker compensation." Worker compensation. Fair pay. A symbolic gesture at the very least, even if Cal is no longer a king, and whatever control he had over the country is gone. I doubt he has much, if any, say in what happens to the treasury, and frankly, I'm not concerned with that right now. Killorn knows it, but he dances around the information I want, trying to lead me away. Slowly, I shift my gaze to Sarah as she works. Up close, she smells as soothing as her touch, carrying a fresh scent like clean linens. Her steel-gray eyes focus on my neck, finishing up the last of my bruises. "Sarah, do we have a casualty count?" I ask quietly. Killorn shifts uncomfortably in the chair next to my bed, coughing a little. He shouldn't be surprised by the question. "Sarah certainly isn't. She doesn't break her rhythm." "Don't worry yourself with that," the skin healer answers. "Everyone's alive," Killorn offers quickly. "Farley, Davidson, Cal." I already knew as much. He wouldn't be smiling, and I would have woken up to a great deal more chaos if any of them had died. No. He knows exactly what I'm asking, who I'm asking about. All done, Sarah says, ignoring my question fully. Instead, she offers a tight-lipped smile as she steps back from my bedside. You should rest now. You need it, Mayor Barrow. Nodding, I watch her go, seeing herself out of the bedroom with a sweep of her silvery clothing. Unlike the other healers I remember, she has no uniform to speak of anymore. Probably ruined in the battle, when she attended to so many dead or dying. The door closes softly behind her, leaving Killorn and me to weather the heavy silence. Killorn, I finally mutter, prodding at him with tentative fingers. He glances at me, watching with a pained expression as I draw myself up against the pillows. Ashamed, his eyes flicker to my healed side. Even though the wound is gone, his expression darkens. So does his voice. You were bleeding to death when we found you, he whispers, as if even the memory is too horrible to recall at a normal volume. We didn't know if you would... if Sarah could... His voice trails away, laced with a pain I know all too well. I've seen Killorn bleeding to death, too, when he nearly lost his life in Newtown. I guess I repaid the favor. Swallowing hard, I touch my ribs, feeling nothing but unbroken skin beneath the folds of a fresh shirt. I guess the gash was worse than I thought. Not that it matters anymore. And... Maven? I can barely say his name. Killorn holds my gaze, his expression unchanging, giving no indication of an answer for an agonizing moment, long enough for me to wonder what answer I'm hoping to get, which future I want to live in. When he drops his eyes, focusing on my hands, my blankets, anywhere but my face, I realize what he's saying. A muscle twitches in his cheek as he clenches his jaw. Something in me unwinds, a coil finally springing loose. I sigh and lie back, shutting my eyes as a storm of emotions rolls over me. All I can do is bear it as the world spins. Maven is dead. Shame and pride battle in equal measure, as well as sorrow and relief. For a second, I think I might actually throw up. But the nausea passes, and I open my eyes again to find everything in its place. Killorn waits silently. It's odd for him to be so patient. Or it would have been a year ago, when he was just the fish boy, another kid from the Stilts with no future but whatever tomorrow held. I was the same. Where's the body? I don't know, he says. And I see no lie in him. He has no reason to lie about this. As with Ilara, I'll need to see the corpse, to know it's well and truly finished. But his body frightens me more than hers, for obvious reason. Death is a mirror, and to look at him like that, I'm afraid I'll see myself. Or worse, see him as I thought he was. Does Cal know what I did? My voice breaks as I speak, suddenly fraught with emotion. I press a hand to my mouth, trying to calm myself. I refuse to cry over him. I refuse. Killorn merely watches. I wish he would hug me, or hold my hand, or maybe bring me something sweet to stuff in my mouth. Instead, he pulls away to stand up. He looks on me with such pity, it makes me wince. I don't expect him to understand, and I don't want him to. Like Sarah, he crosses to the door, and I feel suddenly abandoned. Killorn, I protest, until he turns the knob, and someone else steps into the room. Cal fills the chamber with warmth, as if someone just lit a crackling fire. His gleaming red armor is gone, replaced by simple clothing. He wears a mismatch of colors, without a stitch of black or scarlet, because they aren't his colors anymore. Killorn slips out behind him, leaving us alone. Before I can even wonder if Cal heard my question, he answers it. "You only did what you had to do," he says, slowly taking Killorn's chair